And so he's going to be doing that. He'll be playing acoustic guitar to his amazing photographs. And then we have a little change for tomorrow night. We have a band called Trailer Hawk who are going to do a few songs.
Very Canned Hamish Hawk.
Yeah, but Mini Hawk. They're very good.
Yeah.
They're going to be opening, and then Sunday morning we'll hit the stage at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add, Bruce, about Sunday morning?
Anything I want to add? I don't know if there is.
We're going to play the song Uptown.
Oh, great.
Anything you want to add about that particular track?
Uptown is probably our happiest sounding song. And we had Dominic Conway play saxophone.
And Allison Gorman.
Yep, on trumpet, who's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have some great female vocals as well.
And
on the
Leah Commons. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The great Leah Commons.
And the record is on vinyl now,
We have it on vinyl, and you can get it on iTunes, and you can get it on all...
On Spotify. Whole deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Come go and check out our website on sundaymorning.band.
sundaymorning.band, and we are playing tomorrow night at the Kulch. Doors are at 7:30. And the show starts promptly at 8. So be there before 8 to get a seat.
Yes.
Why should people care about Sunday morning? Why should people care?
Because we're so damn good.
Yeah, it's a good band.
We're just so damn good.
It's a really good band. We don't play very often. The songs are really good. Bruce and I put a lot of work into this. The players are amazing.
Yeah.
It's going to be an entertaining show. We're in the straight this week. What did Mike Giesinger say about us?
He could have said we are brilliant.
Yeah, he could
have. He could have said brilliant. He could have used the word brilliant.
People don't make records like this anymore. It's kind of like it's an indulgent record for us, but it's really entertaining, and he's going to have a good time.
And it's fun.
It's fun. It's a fun record.
Have some fun.
Have some damn fun.
Have some damn fun in Vancouver.
Yeah, right?
And
it's about time.
Here we go with Uptown by Sunday Morning. Well, thank you very much, Sunday Morning, and doo-doo-loot-doo.
Doo-doo.
Ham.
Yes, Nard.
This is amazing, but it's the wrong
That's
track.
That's Come the Rain, which is a great song.
It's the wrong song.
That is a great song.
Thank you.
What is this song? Well, we get the other song all queued up.
This is called Come the Rain.
And here we go with Uptown, bonus doo-doots, and keep on rocking in the free world, and doo-doo-loo-doo.
Doo-doo.
That I'm not there to carry home. here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Welcome back. Today is Friday, January 20th, and I'm Aaron Strickland.
And I'm Sean Yoon. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia, to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It's currently 5:09 p.m., and time for a full hour of independent campus, local, and international news.
To start the show, we have News 101 reporter Andrew Seale's report on the availability of French-speaking healthcare professionals in BC.
Following that, we have News 101 reporter Jake Clark's report on UBC Theatre's latest show, Love and Information, a play by Carol Churchill.
And next up, we have Alex Norman's weekly financial report.
Finally, we have Jake Clark's discussion on the rise of far-right sentiment on university campuses across Canada.
But first, some headlines for today. In campus news, the Board of Governors increases spending of endowment fund, allocating more money to financial aid. The UBC reported Tuesday that the Board of Governors approved an increase in the spending rate of UBC endowments from 3.5% to 4% at their December board meeting. One of the effects of the increase will mean that the university is able to spend $1.4 million more each year on student financial aid. Although the review submitted to the board did note that in case of a severe market crash, the asset mix which the endowment is invested in could lose an estimated $25 million. Also, UBC's new aquatic center was unveiled on Wednesday. UBC athletes tested out the new $39 million pool facilities Wednesday morning, and guests, including reporters, were given a tour of the space. Some of the new center's notable features include a child-friendly lazy river and a 1.3-liter underground holding tank that will store rainwater from the roof and help maintain the pool's water levels. Unlike the old aquatic center, it does not offer an outdoor pool space or free gym access. The new center will officially open next Monday on the 23rd.
In local news, drug overdoses claimed an unprecedented 914 lives in BC in 2016. Illicit drug overdoses claimed the lives of 914 people in BC, the BC Coroner's Service revealed Wednesday, making it the deadliest overdose year on record and representing an increase of nearly 80% from the year before. December saw another spike in deaths from 142 recorded, up from the previous monthly high of 128 recorded in November of 2016. Chief Coroner Lisa LaPointe said, quote, fentanyl, an opioid 100 times more potent than heroin, has been a game changer for drug overdose deaths in BC. This is an illicit drug dependency crisis and is not likely to be resolved anytime soon, end quote, she said. BC Health Minister Terry Lake announced more money for treatment beds and said the federal government needs to step up. Quote, the federal government should declare a federal public health emergency, end quote, said Lake. Every part of the province is affected, but Vancouver continues to be the epicenter of the crisis, said LaPointe. 51 people died of illicit drug overdoses in Vancouver alone in December. 4 out of 5 of the overdose deaths were men, and more than half were between the ages of 30 and 49. Fentanyl's potency makes it attractive to drug traffickers, who can smuggle in many doses in a small package, and deadly to users because a dose the size of a grain of sand can kill. BC Health Minister Terry Lake said the province was allocating more than $16 million in new money to tackle the crisis, including an additional 40 adult intensive residential treatment beds and 20 for youth. The province is also funding 50 new intensive outpatient treatment spaces, as well as converting the cost of treatment therapies, such as methadone and suboxone, for people with low incomes. A 32-year-old mother suffering from postpartum depression has been found dead. On November 17th, Kim Chen learned his wife, Florence Leung, had died. She'd gone missing from their family home in New Westminster the month before. Quote, 2 months have passed since the detectives and victims' assistant staff showed up at our home with a grim look on their faces. I knew immediately that what they were going to say before they entered the door, end quote. Chen wrote on Tuesday, January 17th. The 32-year-old mother of the infant boy has been dealing with postpartum depression, Chen said. Police said no foul play was suspected in her death. This week, Chen posted a Facebook statement about the loss of his wife and sent a message to other mothers who may be dealing with depression. Quote, for all the new moms experiencing low mood or anxiety, please seek help and talk about your feelings. You are not alone. You are not a bad mother, end quote, he wrote. Chen said anxiety over breastfeeding could have been one of the several contributing factors in his wife's postpartum depression. Quote, there needs to be an understanding that it is okay to supplement with formula and that formula is a completely viable option, end quote, he said. The baby is under the care of Chen. Quote, our baby boy is growing well and well taken care of, end quote, Chen wrote. Quote, he is at 90th percentile for height and weight and smiles and laughs a lot, end quote. In national news, it's official. Polarizing Canadian entrepreneur Kevin O'Leary is running to become leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. O'Leary officially launched his bid on Wednesday using a video on his Facebook page to declare his candidacy. Quote, you know why? I listen to you, unquote. He said in the video, thanking the 40,000 Canadians he said went to his website and encouraged him to run. He has often been critical of Justin Trudeau's economic policies, calling the Canadian economy, quote, deeply broken, end quote. O'Leary gained notoriety in the U.S. with his role as Shark on ABC's Shark Tank, in which he continues to appear. The Conservative Party is set to select its new leader on May 27th. Joseph Boyden participates in his first interview since an investigative journalist called his heritage claims into question. Beleaguered Canadian author Joseph Boyden still has a long way to go if he wants to be accepted again by the Indigenous communities he writes about, says Anna Schnabe, author and NDP member of the Manitoba legislature, Wab Kinu. According to Kinu, Boyden didn't do enough to clarify his background in an exclusive interview with CBC host and friend Candy Palmater. In the interview, Boyden told Palmater he's, quote, a white kid from Wallowdale, a Toronto neighborhood with native roots, end quote. Roots that the Nipmuc and is on his father's side and Anishinaabe on his mother's side. But he also maintained that he claims that his claims to Indigenous ancestry are based largely on stories he was told by his family growing up, not necessarily by official documentation. That's not specific enough for many Indigenous people whose identities are more often tied closely with nations, communities, or families. Quote, it's a start, end quote, Kinu said. Quote, in order for people to welcome him or feel comfortable with him, he's got to answer some of these questions, end quote.
In international news, President Barack Obama has commuted the present prison sentence of former Army intelligence analyst and whistleblower Chelsea Manning. The 29-year-old whistleblower was sentenced to 35 years in prison in August 2013 for providing classified military documents to WikiLeaks. She will now be released on May 17th of this year instead of 2045. The decision has been met with outrage from prominent Republicans, including House Speaker Paul Ryan, who accused Mr. Obama of setting a dangerous precedent. The former soldier was previously known as Bradley Manning before coming out as transgender in 2013 after her incarceration. Since then, she has attempted two suicides and went on a hunger strike until doctors allowed her to receive gender reassignment surgery. However, a military doctor has refused to change her gender on military records. In the final days of his presidency, Mr. Obama has commuted a total of 209 sentences, pardoning 64 people at one time. During his tenure at the White Office, he has commuted the sentences of 1,385 people, the most by any president in U.S. history. Tensions rise in Gambia as Senegalese troops enter the country to remove incumbent Yahya Jammeh, who refuses to step down. The move comes soon after President-elect Adama Barrow was sworn in the country's embassy in Senegal. Jammeh lost the elections on December 1st to Barrow. He originally conceded, but then announced his total rejection of the results. Representatives of West African states attended the swearing-in ceremony amid heavy security presence. The Senegal troops are backed by Nigerian air and naval power, as well as other troops from Ghana. Mr. Barrow remains in Senegal and has said that he will not return to Gambia's capital, Banjul, until the military operation comes to an end. Nearly 26,000 Gambians have fled to nearby Senegal, expecting violence to break out amid the political crisis. A few people have come out to celebrate, timidly chanting the name of Mr. Barrow or waving at the cars driving by.
Those are your campus, local, national, and international headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more contributor segments.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
The next one is this Wednesday, January 25th.
Welcome back to News 101. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us.
And now we have News 101 reporter Andrew Seals report on the availability of French-speaking healthcare professionals in BC.
So we're experiencing a little bit of some technical difficulties, so we'll just move on. So now, News 101 reporter Jake Clark's report on love and information.
Howdy. That last segment was, in fact, the full segment. It was just there for anyone who speaks fluent cicada. Yeah, so love and information is the most recent entry in this year's bill for UBC drama. And it is an anthology play of about 60 vignettes. Some of them are very short. Some of them are about 5 minutes long. Some of them are as short as a few seconds. And it is centered around the theme of, what did you know, love and information. It is a very well-acted play, and it is a very accomplished cast. And there is really no way to summarize it. There is all of the plots, but also none of the plots because of the length. And it is a very intensive effort if you're at all into, like, just beautiful visuals. There are some very impressive projections in this one, or some amazing performances, especially packed into so little time for some of these vignettes. I highly recommend seeing this show. It is on at the Freddie Wood Theater with shows at 7:30 until the 4th. It runs until the 4th. You can buy tickets online from their Facebook page, the UBC Theater website, and I believe the UBC Theater Facebook page. And if you'd like to support – if you'd like to hear more about this, actually, next Wednesday at 5 to 6 o'clock, the Arts Report with myself and Ashley Park will cover this show in depth, as there is a lot to be said about it. And all I can say right now is that you should really see the show for purposes – not just to support UBC Theatre, but also because it's a fantastic show. And I believe that is all I can say on the matter right now, because for me to go any further would take a lot of time and probably a lot of help from Ashley to prevent me – to keep me even remotely on topic and not on a random tangent about Batman v Superman. Seriously, that was a weird – this was kind of a weird year for film on the whole and for theater too. I mean, Vancouver Fringe was excellent, as we all know, but there's some strange things. But the bottom line here is see Love and Information. And anybody in this room seen Love and Information? Anybody planning on going to see it? Anybody? I know you're standing there. I can see you. Speak! Hey. Oh my God, they're robots. I knew they were robots. And I didn't know how this happened. They told me if I took the pills, I didn't think anybody would be robots again. But you know what? Oh dear Lord. Oh, great time for this to happen, too. It's inaugural. Tyrant's getting inaugurated. Now there's robots. That's fantastic. Anything else going to happen? Jack the Ripper going to show up? Yeah. But there is, yeah, but again, this is why you should probably listen to the Arts Report as well for this. But again, Love and Information, there's a Facebook page. There is the UBC Theater Facebook page at Freddie Wood Theater on campus, which they use excellently throughout. They really use the venue as part of the show. Buy a ticket. Go see it. And tell your friends. Tell your friends' friends. Tell your family. Tell your family's friends. I mean, your family's friends would be a little different, a little tangential, but you know what? It's a good show. Put the information out there. Cheers.
All right. Thank you, Jake. We're going to take a quick PSA break. Stay tuned for more contributor segments.
I went to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR and I met the love of my life. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary.
Thanks to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR, I'm now the president of the Vegan Hot Dog Appreciation Society.
After going to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR, I've successfully synthesized the vaccine for two left feet. Now everybody can dance.
Thanks to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR, I'm now nominated for a Daytime Emmy Award.
If you want to change your life, come to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR from 11 to 1 every week. No experience is necessary.
Thank you, Volunteer Wednesdays.
Tired of the gender binary, gender policing, or just want to speak your truth?
Join CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective.
This group of radio makers is all about centering the voices, issues, concerns, and experiences of women identified, transgender, intersex, two-spirit, genderqueer, gender nonconforming, non-binary, and gender fluid folks and allies.
Anyone can join, no experience necessary.
Like the Gender Empowerment Collective on Facebook or email volunteer at citr.ca.
Our show, Babe Waves, airs Thursdays from 5 to 6 and features music, interviews, events, news, commentary, basically anything we care to talk about.
See you then.
I went to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR and I met the love of my life. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary.
Thanks to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR, I'm now the president of the Vegan Hot Dog Appreciation Society.
After going to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR, I've successfully synthesized the vaccine for two left feet. Now everybody can dance!
Thanks to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR, I'm now nominated for a Daytime Emmy Award.
If you want to change your life, come to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR from 11 to 1 every week. No experience is necessary.
Thank you, Volunteer Wednesdays.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live bands, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
I think the news midweek, when the midweek news broke that Teo Dezar wasn't going to be playing in this game.
Growing sport, and to do it on a university campus with an educational message behind it.
They'll be facing off against all the big teams from all the other conferences and the nationals.
Want to be a CITR sports broadcaster? Looking for a cool way to get involved in UBC sports? Then email sports101@citr.ca or come by our station in the Nest to find out more. See you soon.
You're listening to CITR 101.9. Broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking for one.
Discorder magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
Do you want to voice this one?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Do you want me to voice it?
I can
voice it.
Yeah, please voice
That's
this one.
That's the wrong mic.
I forgot.
You f- dip. I can't believe I put up with this. And I asked for a grape soda, you asshole. Okay.
Due to a labor dispute, CITR is missing its star voice actors. That means if you're interested in producing PSAs, advertisements, and various other promotional wonders for airplay on the radio, we need you. Learn how to get involved with CITR's production department and all other facets of volunteering at CITR and Discorder Magazine at CITR.ca. Programming, photography, media training, and more. Plus, a guest star in the lounge. No, wait, we can't promise that.
Can't believe I put up with this.
Ever had a hankering to ski the world-famous slopes of Whistler?
Welcome back to News 101. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at CITR.ca, broadcasting live from the unceded Musqueam territory here at University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Next up is Alex Norman's financial report.
This is the weekly financial update report with Alex Norman, keeping you updated with what's going on in the markets. These are this week's top stories for Thursday, January 12th to Thursday, January 19th, 2017. Samsung's chief avoids arrest in South Korea corruption scandal. Fed's Yellen says it makes sense to gradually raise U.S. interest rates. J.P. Morgan to pay $55 million in mortgage discrimination fees. And Netflix shocks analysts with higher-than-expected subscription additions. We begin today's news with the court's decision in South Korea to refuse to issue a warrant for the arrest of the acting head of Samsung, J.Y. Lee, over his alleged role in a corruption scandal that threatens to bring down the country's impeached president, Park Geun-hye. They accuse Lee, the 48-year-old heir to South Korea's biggest family-run conglomerate, of paying $36.6 million U.S. in bribes. In return, he allegedly sought government approval for a controversial 2015 merger of two Samsung affiliates. The involvement of one of South Korea's most powerful men has rocked the country's business world, as it signaled that prosecutors were prepared to use the full force of the law against the head of a company whose revenues equal one-fifth of the country's GDP. Following an 18-hour deliberation that ended just before dawn, the Seoul Central District Court refused to issue an arrest warrant. Quote, after reviewing the content and the process of the investigation so far, it's difficult to acknowledge the necessity and the substantiality of an arrest at this current stage, said a judge.
The special prosecutor's office said it deeply regretted the court's ruling and vowed to continue its investigation into the scandal. Shares in Samsung were down for the week, closing on Thursday for a 3.66% loss. The U.S. Central Bank says it's looking for a raise, and it's coming soon. With the U.S. economy close to full employment and inflation heading towards the Federal Reserve's goal of 2%, it makes sense for the U.S. Central Bank to gradually lift interest rates, said Fed Chair Janet Yellen on Wednesday.
As of last month, I and most of my colleagues, the other members of the Fed Board in Washington, and the presidents of the 12 regional Federal Reserve banks, were expecting to increase our federal funds rate target a few times a year until, by the end of 2019, it is close to our estimate of its longer-run neutral rate of 3%.
The Fed raised short-term interest rates last month only for the second time since the 2007-2009 financial crisis, when it slashed rates to near zero and began buying massive amounts of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities to push down long-term borrowing costs. Yellen continued by noting, quote, "The rate increase in December reflects a confidence in the U.S. economy that will continue to recover." U.S. bank to pay big on some alarming accusations. J.P. Morgan Chase has agreed to pay $55 million to settle a U.S. Justice Department lawsuit accusing it of discriminating against minority borrowers and willfully violating the U.S. Fair Housing Act and the Equal Credit Opportunity Act between 2006 and 2009. In a complaint filed by the U.S. Justice Department, the bank is accused of a number of things, including not requiring mortgage brokers to document reasons for changing rates from the ones based on credit-related factors, for failing to address racial discrimination, and for encouraging it to continue. As a result of this discrimination, minorities were charged more for home loans than Caucasian borrowers with the same credit profile, paying tens of millions of dollars more in additional borrowing costs. Quote, "We have agreed to settle these legacy allegations that relate to price set by independent brokers," said JP spokesman Elizabeth Seymour. And, quote, "We deny any wrongdoing and remain committed to providing equal access to credit." Shares in JP Morgan Chase & Co. were down this week, closing on Thursday at $83.30 for a 3.48% loss.
Oh my God.
Netflix and chill is so 2016. In 2017, it's all about going global. Streaming video pioneer Netflix Inc. added a whopping 36% more subscribers than it expected in the last quarter of 2016, a sign of success for its ambitious global expansion, which sent shares up 8% in the extended trading hours on Wednesday. According to research firm FactSet, Netflix signed up 7.1 million new subscribers globally, far more than the 5.2 million analysts had expected, beating targets at home and abroad even as it raised prices. The streaming service posted fourth quarter earnings per share of 15 cents on revenue of $2.48 billion, roughly a 35% year-over-year increase in sales. Netflix says it plans to release more than 1,000 titles of original programming this year, up from 600 hours last year. Shares in Netflix were up for the week, closing on Thursday at $138.41 for a 7.15% gain. In other market news, these are this week's numbers. Toronto's S&P TSX Composite Index was down 0.05% to close for the week at 15,409 points on Thursday. The broader S&P 500 index was also down this week, posting a loss of 0.29% to close at 2,263 points on Thursday. The Nasdaq closed on Thursday with a loss of 0.13% for the week. In the European markets, the German DAX closed up this week 0.63%. The Japanese Nikkei posted a gain of 0.01%. The Shanghai Composite Index was up 0.12%. In the commodities market, the February gold futures closed up this week at $1,202 an ounce, while February crude futures are down this week 1.9% to close at $52 a barrel. In natural gas, February future contracts are down 3.45% to close at $3.30 a unit. In the bond market, yields for 10-year Canadian bonds are currently at 1.763%. U.S. 10-year Treasury yields closed higher this week at a rate of 2.502%.
Thank you, Alex. We are going to take a PSA break, but stay tuned for News 1-1 reporter Jake Clark's discussion on the rise of far-right sentiment on university campuses across Canada.
Are you interested in Indigenous issues?
Are you down with decolonization?
Do you have something to say?
Or have a topic to share?
we have just the thing.
Join UBC's first ever Indigenous Radio Collective.
We're a team of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people.
I'm Niska from my mother.
From the Tahltan Territory.
I'm a settler from Washington State.
I'm from the Qualicum and Musqueam First Nations.
I am Quechua Indigenous from Saraguro, Ecuador.
We broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land
of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Whatever you want to talk about, we're into it.
Everyone is welcome, no experience necessary.
Unceded Airwaves airs every Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
And we meet every Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. to plan our upcoming shows.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Unceded Airwaves.
We want to hear your story.
UBC is something of an embarrassment of riches when it comes to inclusivity. At this very radio station, there's women's, Aboriginal, and LGBTQ collectives. Wonderful content creators, all of them, who have a very active part in running this place. And I don't think I'm overstating when I say we probably could not manage what we do without them. But they're just a drop in the bucket, because there are so many different organizations, different clubs, aiming to represent pretty much every possible creed or ethnicity you can imagine, both for transplants like myself and for BC natives of any stripe who choose to attend this institution. And this constitutes a very great effort on behalf of the student body to organize this way, as well as the AMS, to enable representation and to enable this group action without dissolving identity. And in this way, they act on behalf of their 60,000 plus students, which is really pretty impressive when you think about it, the effort that happens there just to organize these and to, on behalf of the AMS, to fund some of them. And of course, there are complaints of representation in the forum. There will be complaints of representation in almost any public or semi-public forum. That is the nature of the beast. But the intriguing thing is that one of the most recent, and probably considering the day that this is being recorded and the day that I'm saying this thing on air, one of the most apt instances of this is an unofficial organization tendering a complaint, an organization called the WSU. The WSU, which is a seemingly innocuous acronym, stands for White Student Union. Their primary means of disseminating information is a Facebook page, which boasts about 900 plus members, numbering as they would have at UBC students, alumni, and faculty. Their mission statement is that anti-white racism is the most pressing issue faced by people of European descent, and that the allowance of student organizations for other ethnicities is a manifestation of blatant favoritism and, as such, institutional oppression on behalf of the AMS. They believe that this is beyond a university issue, as per a video posted on their website stating that Canada is, quote, no country for white men. That's the title of the video, by the way. And this principal complaint that they have is intriguing, and there is a certain thing that one of the most common statistics that they do cite is that some estimates have had that white students are a minority at UBC, technically, because they're less than 50% of the student body and are exceeded, for example, by Asian students. And there are differing statistics in this regard. There are some projection, it is close, either way you put it. However, in interest of representation, the AMS provides, among other things, several organizations that they do recognize, including an Armenian Students Association, a British expatriate student team, a Greek student association, a Russian club, and a Scandinavian and Nordic cultural association. Yes, and all of these clubs are recognized fully and funded, and can lobby for funding from the AMS. Now, there is also an argument for this sentiment proposed by the WSU as a free speech issue. And there is a common sentiment there, almost paramount to the issue that they have of white oppression, to also claim that there is systematic free speech oppression conducted by the AMS. And this is interesting because the AMS does have an approved Free Thinkers Club, which is a skeptics organization, And UBC also boasts an unofficial group called the Free Speech Club, with whom a representative of whom I'm not sure that's grammatical. I'm in English, I should know that. One of whose representatives, I believe that's correct, I met with regarding this issue. More on that later. And like the Free Speech Club, the WSU is not approved by the AMS, as one may imagine. And their origin might have something to do with that, because the WSU page on Facebook is very similar to many others formed for many other universities, including Simon Fraser here, including Langara, and just about every university you can think of. These pages were set up en masse by members of the Daily Stormer, a white supremacist website, an openly white supremacist website, I will say, in an attempt to disseminate their views to university campus environments, to specifically to the white students. No kidding, right? On university campuses. And this is insidious when you think about it, because this is fascist sentiment spread to people who they believe, anyway, out of anger or disillusionment or naivete or boredom, just plain boredom, will listen to them. And the word fascist is appropriate here, although it is overused in discourse, especially now. But it is apt here because the WSU, where there is activity on the page, it is not simply a page that was created and let fallow, reposted this interesting polemic by a fellow named, well, I don't think this is his Christian name, but an American libertarian named Augustus Saul Invictus, who was actually banned from Canada and last March, actually March 1st, for spreading racial rhetoric, among other things. And his post, which was forwarded by the WSU page, ended with this line. This is sort of a call to arms, sort of type of post. It was a resentment of what he refers to as Antifa or anti-fascists. And this line that it ends with really does put the nail in the coffin there, because this is, quote, "Remember that this is what the fascies means. As individuals, we can be broken, but together we are invincible." Yes, the fascies was conceived as a Roman symbol of togetherness and strength. United we stand, divided we fall. Yeah, and as Robin Williams once said, the swastika is just a Tibetan good luck charm, but context changes those things a little bit. And there is the argument, of course, that people have this right, symbols aside, to state this opinion, and to be a provocateur, or even just be a plain troll. And that line, as an article profiling them did point out, can be blurred in these times. Which brings us back to the Free Speech Club, who I spoke with their representative, Cooper Asp, who stated that they would defend the WSU's right to organize on their own principles, although they do not endorse their message. The UBC Free Speech Club abides by classical liberal tradition, what would be a libertarian, sort of a libertarian. The libertarian isn't really the correct word, but classical liberal bent of fellows like John Locke and John Stuart Mill would be good examples of that. And they would not, because their statement is that they do not necessarily agree with these views. They did sell Make America Great Again hats, which were not bought for the Trump campaign but from an independent provider, here on election day for the stated reason that if Hillary was unpopular here, they would sell her merch too. There is a contrarian and, in that way, classical liberal idea to represent their perspective. And this is a common argument. This is a common argument from many perspectives. And on the other side of it is the opinion voiced by Dr. Robert Crawford, a UBC political scientist who pointed out that between that sentiment, Locke, Mill, Voltaire, if you go by the misquotation in his biography, that between their sentiment and now, what we have to deal with now is a series of events that included the rise and crimes of fascism to get to the eventual Godwin moment. Perhaps you've already reached that. And these crimes were enabled in many ways by rhetoric that involved this, these symbols, this desire to have one's own identity to this extreme that it comes first and that it leads to the harm of other people. And the interesting thing about this is that these opinions were offered regarding the WSU from both sides of the argument, but the WSU themselves did not provide comment when asked through the Facebook page. And as such, this shall proceed in that light. But they were asked for a comment on whether or not they do believe in this context or whether or not this is part of a communitarian impulse that might just have an unfortunate implication, as there are on either side of the political machine. But they did not comment on that. They did not offer comment at all, actually. These people are not, as of yet, dangerous, at least not on the whole. They are not vandalizing places of worship or harassing those different from them, or at least they're not taking credit for that. They are not visible, so they do not seem present, but they have an online presence that enables them to disseminate their views. And this paradox, among many others, is one that enables bodies like this to exert influence that would normally be impossible. And this is a factor that is especially relevant now, considering, again, the event that is going on down south as I say these words. They are able to, through semi-anonymous internet commentary, speak their worldview without risking genuine reaction, genuine persecution for their views, but also claim that they are persecuted every day. And they reach out, the appeal here is very much the special snowflake argument that is often they do vilify in others. And the thing is simple: join us and you will be the persecuted hero that can do no wrong. And I want you listeners to know this. Today, a man who is at best an incompetent, at worst a tyrant, and most certainly a venal crook will be sworn into the most powerful political office in the world, in no small part due to the bigotry, ignorance, and fear that these people, willingly or unwillingly, represent. For the next 4 years, he and a cadre of idiots and thieves will go about systematically attempting to rob and deceive just about every other human being with whom they do not share a mirror. These organizations like the WSU, like Richard Spencer, like any of the cavalcade of cretins that will show themselves and feel legitimized by this, are only dangerous because they feel this legitimized this way, and that gives them traction. This is not a partisan issue. This should not be a partisan issue. This is a very small and dangerous belief that is often, I believe, unwillingly disseminated. This is not necessarily even a free speech issue, in that many of the people who believe in genuine fascist sentiment do not care about your rights and they take theirs for granted. This is not even an issue of favoritism, because these people believe that the absence of placation means the presence of persecution. They are not powerful, and I would not say that they're irredeemable. I do believe that many of the posts here might come from feelings of confusion or anger about issues or just plain misinformation, but that does not mean they should be ignored, nor does that mean they should be lavished with attention. It can happen here. We mentioned Kevin O'Leary, and that man is about as qualified to be have national office as he was qualified to be a businessman, which is to say he is abysmally ill-qualified for it. This cannot be ignored, but I am asking you, the listeners, for who's listening, I and everyone else here are very grateful to prove this point, that because it can happen here, it does not mean that it will. Cheers.
Thank you, Jake. That's our program for January 20th. Today's newscast was brought to you by talented volunteer efforts. If you would like to share your comments, get involved, or give us an important news tip, contact us through our Facebook, Twitter, or email us at news@citr.ca.
Podcast and listen to our latest interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/radio/news/101. You can also find great content on our SoundCloud and MixCloud pages. For more independent news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Aaron Strickland.
And I'm Sean Yoon. Today's broadcast was produced by Seher, Asaf, and Andrew Seal from the entire news team at CITR. Thank you for listening.
The December 2016, January 2017 issue of Discorder magazine is out now. We managed to record CITR student executive president Shay McConkie's first glimpse at the new issue.
Whoa!
That's funny.
Open one up yourself to read interviews with Walgren, poet Adele Barclay, Jakin, Kim Wardle, Dad Thighs, and a guide for playing shows in America, amongst other goodies. Plus, live show reviews of The Body, Hannah Epperson, and album reviews of Monomyth, Daniel Terrence Robertson, and more. Thanks to this issue's advertisers, whom we love dearly, Live Van, Geist, Steam Whistle, The Rickshaw Theater, Timber Concerts, The Rio Theater, Mint Records, Nightwood Editions, Audiopile Records, The Astoria Vinyl Records, The Wise Hall, and Jazz Records. Grab a copy around town or read the issue online at discorder.ca. Maybe our best issue ever.
Most likely. I would say, like, high chance of best edition ever. Nobody told me did it on my own.